And now on WRS, Michael McKay with the McKay Interview.
Hello, everyone. Today I have the privilege to be invited to Ukraine's permanent mission to the United Nations and other international organizations in Geneva. I'm here with Ukraine's permanent representative, Ambassador Evgenia Filipenko. Now, you can easily guess the topic of our conversation as the terrible and illegal invasion of her country now enters its 33rd day, today being the 29th of March, 2022. Ambassador Filipenko has had an impressive career in Ukraine's foreign service dating back more than 25 years, having served abroad at the UN in New York, in Vienna at the OSCE, and in Belgrade, and has been in her present post here in Geneva since last year. Your Excellency, it's a pleasure to meet you. Thank you for inviting me and all our listeners to the McKay Interview here to meet you today.
Thank you, Mr. McKay, for having me, and I would be pleased to talk to you and to your listeners about the difficult situation and difficult times we live in.
Great. Ambassador, you can imagine that my questions all focus on one subject today, the existential threat posed to your sovereign country by your big neighbor to the north and east. Now, we'll look at what is going on through the lens of your multilateral activities here at the UN Geneva. My first question is this, and you can imagine all democratically minded people admire the courage and bravery of the Ukrainian people. What have you been focusing on here in the UN, international Geneva, especially since the invasion?
In the face of Russia's brutal, unprovoked and unjustified attacks against Ukraine, the Ukrainian people indeed have shown to the world the incredible strength of a free people fighting for their freedom. We are fighting for our freedom and for the freedom of Europe and the entire world. Russia's barbaric attack on Ukraine was an assault on the UN statute and the world order. Just like our fellow Ukrainians are fighting the military aggression with arms, with diplomats, are fighting on a diplomatic front. That is why our work in Geneva, home to over 40 international organizations, is devoted to consolidating international support of the fundamental principles of international law and order, which prohibit the use of force, violation of sovereignty and territorial integrity, and aggression in relations between states. There is an increasingly distinct understanding among UN member states that against the background of these great violations of international law, there cannot be business as usual in any area of international cooperation, be it human rights, disarmament, health, international trade, communications, humanitarian affairs, as long as Russia continues committing war crimes against innocent civilians. There is also realization that if these violations of international law principles remain unaddressed, nobody can feel safe anymore. We work together with the whole UN membership here in Geneva with all available instruments to make Russia stop their attacks against Ukraine, to bring to account the perpetrators and ensure that this will never happen again.
We're going to come to that a little bit later on, yes. Yeah. Now, I know this may be a difficult question for you to answer because of the security situation, Ambassador, but how do you assess the current situation in Ukraine as we speak today, the 29th of March?
32 days since Russia perpetrated a large-scale invasion of Ukraine, we have seen the most devastating war in Europe since the Second World War.
Since 1945.
Absolutely. Yeah. The Russian troops continue simultaneously attacking Ukraine from the territory of Russia, from Belarus, from the temporary occupied parts of Ukraine's Donetsk, Luhansk region, and Crimea. To illustrate the scope of aggression, Russia has fired 467 missiles just in residential areas. Attacks with aviation, 1,800 airstrikes, tanks and artillery, sent subversion and reconnaissance groups. In dozens of cities, towns and small villages, residential areas were partially burned, infrastructure was destroyed, and enterprises where people worked were blown up. 773 educational institutions, universities, schools, kindergartens were destroyed. Hospitals, churches, monuments, even memorials to Holocaust victims, they became targets.
So I realize that in a war zone, it must be quite difficult to verify these. But these the verification by your own people or by international humanitarian organizations, or is it a combination of both? Or how do you have such precise figures?
These estimates are our own, but we also have the international organizations which document these cases. And here I want to tell you about the heaviest losses that we are having is
Please
the
do.
Human lives.
Yes. Yeah.
So as of today, the UN Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights recorded 2,975 confirmed civilian casualties in Ukraine. 1,100 killed and 1,800 injured. And OHCHR believes that the real figures are much, much, much higher. The Prosecutor General's office in Ukraine is investigating crime committed by the Russian Federation, including killing 144 children and injuring over 220. So the human lives are the losses that are unrepairable. If we can rebuild the houses and the infrastructure, you cannot restore the human lives. And for these war crimes against civilians, the Russian perpetrators will be held into account.
Now, I must ask you this one, Ambassador, because it's something which puzzles me. Although I've been to your country a couple of times, I would not claim in any way to be any kind of expert. But what can you say about the 17% Russian speakers in your country? What are they thinking and saying? And had they, as is claimed by some, been treated badly by Ukrainians prior to the invasion?
You know, this issue of Russian speakers in Ukraine has never had any grounds on the ground, because this has never been an issue in the Ukrainian society. So this myth about the protection of Russian speakers has been brutally and openly dispelled by the barbaric attacks by the Russian military of the cities and towns where the majority of the population speaks Russian. We are all bilingual. We don't care and which language we speak. What we care about is to have the national identity, the national unity, and we are as united as never in the face of the Russian aggression. Speaking about the casualties, I also have to mention the number of refugees that had to leave the country.
We're going to come to the refugee situation a bit later on. But just to go back to that point about language, because it interests me, particularly living in a country, Switzerland, with four official languages where people live pretty happily together. You're saying to me that almost everyone in Ukraine is actually bilingual, speaking Russian and Ukrainian. Because I mean, many of us wouldn't know that.
That's true. The more languages you speak, the more you are a human. That's the words of the famous Ukrainian, be it the Soviet Ukrainian writer. But, you know, people speak Russian in Ukraine mostly due to the forceful Russification, which lasted for centuries on the territory of Ukraine. But I think we're all proud to be multilingual. We are proud to be able to speak foreign languages, but we want to protect our state language, which is the Ukrainian language.
I understand. Coming back to Geneva and multilateralism, in a severe crisis situation such as this war against your country, which multilateral organizations and institutions in Geneva do you particularly turn to at this time?
We are working on many fronts. There are a lot of international organizations in Geneva dealing with humanitarian assistance. And of course, we turn to them. This is the International Red Cross, the UN High Commissioner on Refugees, the World Health Organization. So all these organizations that can provide assistance, humanitarian assistance to the people in need at this moment, that they we work closely closely with them, and we receive considerable support from them.
I see. Now, we all saw the overall condemnation of Russia's unprovoked invasion at the General Assembly in New York, 143 votes out of 193, is my recollection. What further responses have you had here in Geneva rather than in New York?
As I said, here in Geneva, we have over 40 international organizations, so we are trying...
40 plus.
So we work in every organization to ensure that they provide a robust response to what is happening with the international law and order. So in addition to the two resolutions that were adopted in New York, one on Russia's aggression against Ukraine and the second about humanitarian consequences of the aggression against Ukraine, Geneva said its word by adopting a number of decisions and resolutions. Here I would first mention the UN Human Rights Council resolution.
What happened there?
It was the resolution on the situation of human rights in Ukraine stemming from the Russian aggression. What is important that the UN, the organization of the UN system and all international organizations, they clearly introduce the term for Russia's action is the aggression. So the language of this resolution, they built a certain policy for the work of all UN agencies here in Geneva to use the right terminology. This is not a war, this is not a crisis, this is the aggression. That's what the UN General Assembly resolutions say. That's what UN Human Rights Resolution said, that Russia's actions against Ukraine is an aggression against Ukraine. And the key element of this resolution is, apart from the condemnation in the strongest term of these illegal actions of Russia, is the creation of a commission of inquiry, which will investigate human rights violations and abuses of international humanitarian law throughout Ukraine, including Crimea, since 2014. And so this will be the instrument of accountability.
And so this is in the process now. It is being set up as we speak, is it?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I see, okay.
So we look forward to when this Commission of Inquiry will start its work and cooperate with other international institutions dealing with accountability.
Just as the war continues, so your work here continues, and there'll be many people listening to this program who are not particularly familiar with how the United Nations works in Geneva. So just give me an idea of what more you've requested from the UN and its international organizations in Geneva. Because I can imagine you have quite a few demands because the situation is so unusual and so extreme.
I can tell you that we have already taken action across the international organizations in Geneva. I'll give you a few examples. Apart from UN Human Rights Council resolution, we have Conference on Disarmament, which held a special meeting to address this issue from the security and disarmament point of view.
And you're the ambassador also. You sit on that table, do you?
Exactly. Yeah. And there were more, the majority of 65 members of this body who strongly condemned the Russian aggression as a violation of international law and order. International Labour Organization also spoke fiercely rejecting the aggression, which violated the rights of citizens for decent work. World Trade Organization, we had a joint statement by a group of states which called for the suspension of the most favored nation treatment of Russia's goods and services. In World Telecommunication Union, the election of candidates of the Russian Federation for the leadership position was rejected. So we work across all international organizations to ensure that the country that violates the fundamental principles on which these organizations work, they do not deserve a seat in those organizations. So that's our joint action of the countries who realize that this behavior cannot be left unaddressed.
Now, I appreciate that you're not Ukraine's bilateral ambassador to the Swiss Confederation. You're here in Geneva at the United Nations. But can you tell me what support you're receiving, your country's receiving from Bern, from the Swiss Confederation, given that the country has a neutral status?
As you rightly mentioned, I'm not ambassador to Switzerland, but I live in this country and I see all the support that we receive from the government, from the people. The Swiss government expressed its support to Ukraine. I was in the demonstration in Bern where a president of Swiss Confederation spoke, and he spoke to our president.
Federal Council Cassis.
Yes, he spoke to our president, yes, the federal councillor. And we appreciate the political and also all kinds of support that we receive from the Swiss side. We know about the sanctions that the Switzerland approved the decision to join the EU sanctions. But most importantly is the people of Geneva, of Switzerland, who lend their support. They bring, you have seen in front of our mission, the flowers.
Yes.
And the notes of support and a lot of stuff that people bring to help Ukrainian people who are in need. So we are greatly appreciate Switzerland's strong support for Ukraine.
I should mention to the listeners that it's the mission. It's a lovely old house, not far from the centre of Geneva, and the iron gate is full of flowers, and there are candles on the pavement, and it's really quite moving. My guest today is Ambassador Yevhenia Filipenko, Ukraine's permanent representative to the United Nations in Geneva and the other international organisations in this city. Coming back to Switzerland, but now particularly to the Geneva region, what else has been mobilized within Geneva for you? And tell me a little bit more about the local support from local people who live in Geneva and how they've assisted you and supported your people here.
Since the beginning of the full large-scale invasion of Ukraine, we have seen unprecedented mobilization of the civil society in Geneva.
For example.
On the second day, the yard of our mission was full of volunteers. The people just came
to help.
They just came, absolutely, to help bring and pack humanitarian aid until late night. And since then, every day, together with the Geneva branch of the Ukrainian Society, because Ukrainian Society is also very active in Geneva, and with our embassy, together with the Swiss local businesses, we have sent over 482 tons of humanitarian aid.
482
yes.
tons, wow.
So it's really impressive, and this is human support.
And tell me more about the Ukrainian community in Geneva, and more widely in Switzerland. Roughly speaking, how many people are here? They've been here for many years. I mean, long before the invasion started.
Speaking about the number of refugees, I want to give you the numbers.
Please.
Because according to the UN High Commission of Refugees, over 10 million people had fled their homes in Ukraine.
Out of a population of 40 million.
Absolutely, and 6.5 million people were displaced inside Ukraine, and 3.9 million left the country. And you understand that those who fled the countries, they are mostly women and children. According to the Swiss authorities, I will refer to their data, about 13,000 people fleeing Ukraine have now arrived in Switzerland. They expect hundreds of thousands to arrive by the end of the year. I'm hosting two families, women and children, here in Geneva, and I can tell you how open and how welcoming are the Swiss authorities who immediately took a 7-year-old boy to the local school. And they provide all possible assistance.
7 years old, and he was here alone, or his mother was with him?
No, he was with mother.
With his mother, yes. Okay, yeah.
So I can only tell that the Swiss people demonstrate very open and warm attitude towards the Ukrainians coming to Switzerland.
That's very heartening. Ambassador, my last question is, I ask you please to share with me and the listeners to this program your thoughts of Ukraine's future at this critical moment in your country's history. And what I mean to ask is, from your position as Ukraine's permanent representative here at the UN Geneva, how do you see the future development of the conflict and the moves towards some sort of ceasefire at talks taking place in Istanbul in Turkey today?
First, I want to say that we are determined to bring peace to Ukraine and to stop the aggression. After our victory, we will work hard to rebuild the country, and it will be a new Ukraine. Ukraine which will have been built on the basis of the values for which such a high price is being paid. We are looking forward to having negotiations. We need to have negotiations to put an end to the fighting, to save people's life who are left in the besieged cities. We need to provide the humanitarian corridors which have not been possible due to the Russian military actions so far. So the negotiations are going on. It remains to be seen what will be the outcome. But the priority is to have a ceasefire, to provide humanitarian access to the people who are mostly in need, and of course to discuss the international legally binding long-term guarantees of security.
Thank you, Ambassador. Well, we will you towards that victory, and we hope for the rule of law and that the killing stops sooner rather than later. Thank you for answering my question so fully. I'm sure I speak for everyone listening to the program in expressing my admiration for the strength of will and the resilience of your fellow countrymen and countrywomen, and wish you continued fortitude. My guest today has been Her Excellency Madam Yevhenia Filipenko, Ukraine's ambassador and permanent representative of the United Nations in Geneva and other international organizations. Thank you again, Ambassador.
I thank you for this talk, and Slava Ukraini.
Thank you.
That was the McKay Interview with Michael McKay. And don't forget, you can hear that interview again on our website, worldradio.ch.